Hello there. We're trying to keep Choral Chihuahua going, and so we draw your attention to the possibility of listening to us on Patreon for just a few quid a month. This also magically gets rid of the ads. That's Patreon with an E, patreon.com/choralchihuahua. On with the app.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome back to a new series of Choral Chihuahua.
Interrupted cadence.
Nice.
This is our seventh series, which is a surprise, at least to us. Robert Hollingworth here today with chums Eamon Dugan and Nicholas Mulroy, to be heard in our land very soon. It's a new year, good time to mention that we do need your support to make the programme, so we've made it even easier for you to drop us a one-off donation, or best of all, to listen to us via Patreon, which immediately cuts out those pesky ads. Just go to choralchihuahua.com and click on the support option you'd like. If Patreon, you get to choose whether to support at cool suspension level, diphthong level, or even tertiary shift level. Just a few pounds a month for as much listening as you fancy, all ad-free. For the flash amongst you, or indeed a whole choir, you can be an episode sponsor. Imagine the glory. You lovely listeners are very much our mouthpiece. If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends and your choirs about it, post about it, moan about it over coffee, write to us, or send us a voice note about your choral bugbear or delight. But we should get on. We're going to be talking about all sorts of things this spring. How to sing polyphony, starting your own choir, music for tenebrae. But we're starting with one of those things that I suspect many of us have tried, but few of us mastered. Vocal jazz. Our guides in this episode are the London-based ensemble Standard Deviation, and I spent a lovely evening at a rehearsal of theirs a few weeks ago. Let's hear them first in Oscar Pettiford's Swingin' Till the Girls Come Home, arranged for the group by their own baritone, Harry Baker.
I bet you never saw the crazy type of thing that I'll be flinging. Man, I really will be swinging till the girls come home.
Very bad.
Oh, don't shake.
Stay home, maid.
I'm gonna live a little now for all the dues that I've paid. My wife is on vacation, so is my mother-in-law. I bet you never saw the crazy type of thing that I'll be flinging. Man, I really will be swinging till the girls come home.
And some crazy cats I know, oh, we'll let them bring their horns and blow.
And we'll crack up a ball, and the neighbours will murder us all.
We're gonna have a ball, the like of which you never have done. My wife's on vacation, it'll be a crazy kind of fling. Man, I really will be swinging till the bells come home. Roll back that shade, send home the maid. For all these dudes I'll pay, I'm gonna leave, We got it mine, all the crazy cats I know. Biting hard to blow, and we'll cut it, and we'll bomb.
The neighbors will murder us all.
Do,
Fantastic. And the name of the piece?
That was Swing Until the Girls Come Home.
Arranged by...
Wonderful Harry Baker.
I'm skating on quite thin ice here, given that I named my group after a vegetable. But standard deviation, I didn't know the term. Harry?
Well, I mean, its inception was Hugh and Olive just brainstorming a billion names. And we came across standard deviation because jazz standards are the lineage, I guess, of jazz music. But we didn't want to do just jazz standards. We wanted to do, I guess, a lot of jazz adjacent music. So some folk arrangements done with some slightly more interesting harmony as well as by the book. And then some more modern jazz like Esperanza Spalding's I Know You Know. So standard deviation, which I believe is a mathematical term, although I couldn't describe what it means.
Variance around a mean.
Isn't that a mass by John Taverner?
There was a question on the University Challenge last week for which standard deviation was the answer.
We
so we should use that as our...
Well, I'd much prefer your version for the music. Yeah. Can you do a version, send it in?
Oh,
yeah. That'd be really fine. Yeah. But I guess the genius behind Hugh and Olive's term is that we do standards and we deviate from them.
Oh, my God.
We're all amazed.
And we actually do quite a big range of different music. So obviously we specialise in jazz, but we also do some pop arrangements very, very occasionally. We do original songs by Tom, for example. We do quite a lot of folk. So yeah, the inspirations that we take from are quite varied.
Do you sing madrigals?
Not personally, no.
That's the correct answer. Because I can't stand a competition.
Gentle competition.
Personally, no. I'm just looking at you all and imagining a Fagellini rehearsal of sort of 30 years ago or something in my little flat in Brixton, and what things are similar and what things are different. You're much, much, much better at this repertoire, which we only ever touched on, but mostly it's just, you know, iPads and Hugh, you're reading off a phone, which is tiny. And I know that does happen. But it's now, you know, if you haven't got something, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Or I didn't get your message because it was all answering machines and your flatmate would delete the message. But now it's, oh, just airdrop it.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
What are these words?
What do you speak?
So you've made you've done some jingles.
Done some jingles. Yeah.
Can't wait to hear them.
Should we just sing this one through once before the record?
Sorry, is this one?
No, sorry. Coral chihuahua.
Oh, yeah.
No pitches.
Yeah.
No pitches. Yeah. Okay.
Coral Chihuahua.
Was that too slow?
My bad.
Sorry, I can't. I'm a depression.
Can we do that again? And can we hold each of these chords so we're not worrying about the rhythm?
One, two. Coral Chihuahua.
Yeah, nice.
Now that's got a number of different chords in it at once.
Yeah.
So when, especially at the top, when you're tuning for something like that, are you just sopranos? Do you just tune to each other because that's what sopranos do, or are you trying to make sure you're part of?
I would normally tune to a combo of Nell and Tom.
What does that even mean?
I think because you always hear bottom and top, so I'm always very conscious because I'm usually on the top of the texture to make sure that I'm sitting with Tom, and then because Nell's bang in the middle and also has absolutely laser perfect pitch, it's quite handy to be able to use her as a bit of an anchor just in terms of the chord.
What chords would you say are in that last chord then? Go on, Harry, you wrote it.
I guess it's two chords on top of each other, so on that final chord it's like a G major chord on the top and then the lower voices are singing an F major chord. So actually, can we just layer that up? Can we start with the upper voices on the final chord? If you just give a G now. So three, awesome. And now let's put that with the lower voices. So uppers first. Three.
Can I hear the low one on its own?
Yeah, of course. So the F major, three.
Wah.
And together. Okay, should we try it for real?
Yeah.
What kind of intention are we going for?
What's my motivation?
70s sleeves?
Could you try one? Obviously, we'll take whatever you give me, whatever you're finally happy with. But Coral Chihuahua, wah wah wah, because the wah wah thing is a
yeah.
With it like dim,
wah wah wah,
like fade out.
Up to you.
I think
crest.
Yeah,
If it's too good, it'll sound computer generated.
Yeah.
Digitally.
Coral Chihuahua.
Can you try a song, Coral Chihuahua? So Harry indicates it, but it's a gradual.
Coral Chihuahua.
Or a version where it gets faster. Wah, 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 or something.
Yeah, that sounds great. This is quite hard to synchronise, isn't it?
Yeah. Haven't done this before.
No.
One, two. Coral Chihuahua.
Great. So for choirs that want to have a go at this repertoire, we were talking about arrangements and how arrangements are difficult because, I mean, your stuff is fiercely hard and requires really fierce tuning between all the parts. Actually, I suppose we could start with that. The spacing, it sounds to me, it reminds me of the King's Singers arrangement. Simon Carrington was talking about this, that back in the 70s, Gordon Langford did a lot of brass band arrangements but also wrote for the King's Singers. Was always working with that kind of harmonic series spacing. So there was a good gap between the bass and the baritone, slightly less between the baritone and the tenor. And then what the layout at the top, it didn't matter, but it's going to be close, so you've got many, many more options. Mm. And is that the same in what you're doing? It sounds similar.
Yeah, I think I think it's a lot of quick changes between textures. I think a lot of scrunchy, clustery, almost barbershop textures around middle C work very effectively.
Barbershop, close harmony vocal quartets originating in the USA, with the predominance of seventh chords. 1, 3, 5, 7.
Now, when you say barbershop, you mean sevenths.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, okay. Sort of unrooted chords, chords without the bass note at the bottom of the chord. But then making use of tom, our low bass, is so important to our sound and to like sort of the jazz vocal group lineage of Take Six, and more recently, obviously, individuals like Jacob Collier. Having a really strong lower part, but making use of lovely upper structures within the chords. So structures on top of your major and minor triads brings that kind of jazzy, shimmery, sort of big band influence sound, I think.
I guess if you're thinking about texture and orchestration almost of a vocal colour, quite nice not to have necessarily any more than three ideas going on at once. So you've got the bass line, which is usually fairly distinct from everything else that's going on above it.
And quite dynamic.
Yeah, quite kind of leaping around and instrumental often. Mm. Then you'll have maybe an accompaniment texture and then the melody.
So the accompaniment texture is almost like that, the barbershop, not almost like, it is the barbershop. Yeah. So you've got, and that's unusual because if you think of close harmony, you think of conventional Western harmony, you've got the bass at the bottom and the harmony builds up from that. But here you're saying you have the harmony in the middle and the bass is just another texture.
Yeah, I kind of think about it in the way you think Brahms, when he orchestrated, always you had every bass instrument playing the bass part, then you have the middle parts playing the harmony, and then you have a melody instrument. And I kind of think of it in the same way. The melody doesn't necessarily have to sit on top, it can be in the middle, and then all, as long as the accompaniment parts are responding to each other and doing very similar things to each other.
Do you think that was in tune? Yeah, the minor third, 6 to 5 honks.
Then the audience doesn't have too much to focus on. I think it's about leading the audience's ear to the right thing. Mm. And more often than not, that's the melody. So no matter what else we're doing, as impressive as it may sound, it needs to force the audience to the right place. Force, encourage.
And then translating everything that Tom and Harry have just said into, and reflecting on our rehearsal practice, actually quite often we'll focus on that middle barbershop group and then add in, like, and we'll rehearse that really, really intensely with metronome, really focusing on the tuning of every single chord, and then add in the bass, and then add in the tune afterwards, or the melody afterwards. And so it, and we quite often do rehearse in that style, I feel, and it means that that's really solid and everything else is working around it gorgeously.
And I was thinking, you look at a piece of choral music, that's almost the most important thing for an audience, because they hear texture. Yeah, they hear harmony, but if you've got two voices working in thirds, or even an octave and a third, then that's one texture, and the ear perceives that as one thing, and then there's something else going on, maybe more busily in the middle. It's sort of what you got here. You've got three different parts to it. Do you all feel that three thing? I mean, you were talking about tuning. You tune to the two of them. That's a slightly different thing, I suppose. But does that idea of three things ring a bell?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And what Olivia said about the rehearsing, the harmony in the centre, completely. And certainly for me, I said earlier about tuning to tom is really, really important. And actually some of our hardest pieces, it's so vital. We do this brilliant arrangement of I Know You Know, by Es Branza Spalding, which has got a fiendish bass line, and it's and it's changing time signature all over the place, and the middle parts are so hard, and we spent so much time working on the harmony of those middle bits, making them all fit together.
Did you sing that at Star Music last year?
We did, yes.
I think so, because I remember listening to it and think, so we started up, Harry, I can't quite sure how much I'm listening to. I'm not sure if I can process this amount of information, which goes back to that. I mean, we don't quite know where this is going to drop in on a choral chihuahua, but if we're in the fast episode now, it's about talking about the speed at which the brain can appreciate different amounts of harmony, especially as in jazz, it seems to me, being no kind of specialist, the chords seem quite unrelated. Is that the chord progressions? It's not like a sort of a logical harmonic language where the tonic leads to the dominant, which might you then have an interrupted cadence. If you don't know what I'm talking about listening to this, I just mean something normal, some fairly basic progression. The progressions here seem almost to be obtusely non progressive because everyone knows the tune and there have been 5,000 arrangements of it before, and therefore you're trying to throw the listener off guard.
There's definitely, yeah, there's a gentle competitive spirit in the jazz lineage, definitely.
Gentle.
Right. And in the vocal jazz tradition of sort of, you know, one-upmanship, and it's like there's a fun spirit of trying to, as you say, play with jazz standards that everyone has done before. But what I would say is that actually there can be, in the root movement, in what Tom would often be singing, there can be a sort of perfect cadence, like root often through the chords, lots of five ones happening in the harmony between the dominant and the tonic. And actually it's what the upper parts do above that that is trying to sort of completely throw your focus off as a listener, and that's the decorative stuff. But I think going back
because it's decorative, the main parts are in place, so we still feel the normal movement, and then we get this ivy around the chord, if you like.
Exactly that. So as long as the roots, the third and the seventh are in every chord, then we're fine. So where 1, 3 and 5 might be foundational in vast majority of pre-1900 classical music, 1, 3 and 7 are the guiding principles of jazz, and those 3s and 7s are known as the guide tones, above which you can do whatever you want. And as you say, as long as the melody is in some way audible or being paraphrased, then you as a listener feel a bit guided through the tune.
At which point the group sang me, well, actually I'll let the tune become apparent. This rather magical arrangement is by Edward Randall, ex-Swingle, but again specifically done for Standard Deviation. And the tenor soloist is in fact the bass, Tom Lowen.
Like a red rose. thousand miles. Oh, 10,000 miles. Oh,
Edward Randall's wonderful arrangement of that traditional Scottish tune sung just for me, so it seemed, at Standard Deviation's regular Sunday evening rehearsal in the basement of a central London flat. We carried on chatting, first of all with Harry Baker, also eponymous pianist of the Harry Baker Trio, though I first got to know him as one of the National Youth Choir young composers on a course a few years ago.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, you're a jazz pianist, and when I watch jazz pianists, I just can't believe what is going through their head, and I've never had explained to me. Do you write for a vocal ensemble in the same idiom? Are the same shifts happening? Because you don't quite have that same texture there, do you? Even though you might be playing with a bass player and you can be the middle voice, but you're playing everything a lot of the time.
Yeah, so I definitely think with vocal jazz, it's inherently quite an imitative tradition. So where choral music is an authentic kind of original expression, I feel like a lot of vocal jazz is drawing on sounds that have come before. So like the big band lineage, and also that of, as you said, like a jazz trio. So we've got the bass, like a double bass, which is the role that Tom always occupies, and syllables like dum, sum often appear that are a bit like the bass and the hi-hat of the drums. And then providing the momentum and the harmony from the kind of piano chords in the middle would be this four-part barbershop texture we talked about. And then obviously the melody line would be a singer or a horn player. So that's in a way what I think is happening with a vocal jazz arrangement. You're looking to, in a way, imitate either a big band or one of those smaller jazz instrumental ensembles that came before a lot of these vocal groups.
Who's going to explain what scat singing is? We think we know what it is, but go on, Nell, tell us what scat singing is.
I think, again, scat singing probably came after the bebop masters like Charlie Parker, the saxophonist, or Dizzy Gillespie, trumpeter, Miles Davis, trumpeter, made waves as improvisers in the 40s onwards. And then singers like Ella Fitzgerald wanted to get involved again. That maybe that competitive spirit, wanting to like assert their place in the genre, and started using scat syllables, any kind of syllables, generally phonemes, so just sounds rather than actual words.
But there are certain. I mean, do what?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Let's. Is there an official lexicon?
I think there. Yeah, there are things that you can do or fall back on. And actually, when you're writing a cappella, I mean, Tom can talk more about this. But you know, in terms of the syllables you use, there's a bit of an art to that as well. In terms of not distracting from the melody, I think I've definitely fallen prey to writing extremely distracting scat syllables that do not support either the melody or anything.
I get this. My daughter plays in a jazz funk band, which is something I don't know about at all. And you know, she talks about the horn section, and I will hear her practicing those riffs, which have to be phenomenally accurate rhythmically. Mm. And we went to an Earth, Wind & Fire tribute band concert, which was just staggering on a musical level. Even if you had no interest in the music, and I did enjoy it very much, the sheer accuracy. Now they can have headphones, which I know you don't use earpieces like some groups. Swingles, they have certain things going on their ear. One of them talked to us about that on a previous programme. Mm-hmm. The interview with the Swingle Singers featured in our Stour Music episode, June 2022, like all episodes available at choralchihuahua.com. Back to the show. The level of accuracy of those interruptive little moments, but especially when you don't want to get in the way of words, or wouldn't you do that so much when there are words? Or do you just assume, like in pop music, everyone knows what the words are and so it doesn't matter?
I would say we generally have separate scat sections and then accompanying kind of brass like interludes and you know Hugh often uses scat syllables when he forgets the words.
haven't we all done that in Messiah? I was thinking his Yoke Is Easy would be a lot better if you didn't have to sing it all on one vowel. Exactly. Yeah. Hugh, you haven't said anything. Hello.
Hello.
Good. Quick Precy then.
But it was interesting working with the conductor Jamie Burton this summer, who mm-hmm. does a lot of choral work, of course, and also has a good, significant jazz background as well. And the way he would teach us as a 60-person chorus was through scat syllables. And then we were allowed to add the lyrics and words afterwards.
What sort of music?
The Drouffle Requiem, for instance.
Aha.
And even though those are like long lyrical lines, adding, like taking away the words and allowing people to focus on the sound production or the vowels, let's say, actually really, really helped. And I think there is like cross-fertilisation that can help both choral singers and vocal jazz singers, and taking, yeah, good bits of both of them can really enhance the singing.
I'm just interested in this because most of us don't get anywhere close to this. We might do, you know, the odd boom, boom, titty, boom arrangement with a bass, and you know, but nothing like this level of complexity. And I'm interested in how long it takes you. I mean, you talked about the piece you were talking about before.
I know, you know.
Yeah.
That one. I mean, are we done with that one?
No.
That took us a long time. But Allard Walker, who does quite a few of our arrangements or has done in the past, that was probably his most daring, most complex one ever. I mean, the time signature was changing all over the place. It's also a song that is, I mean, the song anyway is quite complicated and quite fast moving. The melody's fast. There's loads and loads of words. It's very. There's so much texture going on anyway. Like I said, the bass line is fiendish. Mm. That one, I'd say, is very much probably going to be a work in progress forever because it's so, so difficult. Yeah, I don't know what anyone else thinks about that one.
Well, because we do pretty much all of our music off copy, it means that we all have to put in time away from rehearsal to learn these pieces. And so by trying to learn them off copy, it actually means that we are kind of doing a lot of the note bashing ourselves. So that doesn't mean that we never have to do note bashing in the rehearsals. My God, there's a lot of it. But I think it does speed up the process, knowing that, okay, well, we have to get this, you know, off book.
Hey, folks, who knew? Practice your music before you come to rehearsal.
But I'd also say, really counterintuitively, it's the harder arrangements that we've spent longer learning as a group or by ourselves that are more easily memorable because we've done the hard work already. And then yeah, it's all muscle memory. It's in the muscle memory already, which actually as a choral singer generally is not a place you get to very often. Mm. Muscle memory, you usually turn up, you read what's on the page, and you leave, and you don't. It never gets further than that surface level.
Charles Gibbs talks about bass in Fantagini, BBC singers, a man who sings an awful lot of notes in 1 week, and you know you can give him a piece that you've done 2 weeks before, and he won't recognise it because he's processed it in a particular way. Where you have to read it so fast, and that doesn't mean you hold on to it for later. But also, don't you think, let's just say we, don't you think one is a little bit lazy sometimes with the way one goes through pieces and you just read them and you could easily learn them, but because, I mean, just singing a piece again and again isn't necessarily a way to learn it, is it actually? And that's why I'm interested in the whole business of texture. Because if, Harry, you're sitting at the piano and you're playing a nice 9-7 chord and you're just moving your fingers half a centimetre and then playing a semitone further up, which is a different chord, that's one thing as a physical feel on the piano, because there's a physicality into it as a jazz pianist. Quite different for four of you to have to learn those two chords and shifting. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether there's a question there, but Tom.
We do a lot of moving between two different chords. I mean, that's kind of... it's a lot of our rehearsals. Like, can we do this chord and then that and then back and forth, and we'll just vamp these two bars for about 10 minutes until it's in and it feels embodied.
Yeah. Well, I think as you invited me here and then force-fed me a really nice meal, yeah. and we were talking downstairs, I think I'm going to put a challenge to you that you produce an arrangement that choirs could manage... but has some of all of these things that you're talking about, so that it's manageable, but there are some challenges in it. Mm-hmm. And we talked about whether that can be your own composition or whether an arrangement of something and all the copyright joys, but... Oh, no, you're just moving your hand. Sorry,
yeah,
I thought you
sorry.
Wanted to say
no,
that.
No, sorry. Yeah.
On the texture point, though, of course, we've touched on there being a legacy and competitive spirit and so on and so forth, but this group is a passion project. We are very good friends and we've all been singing together in various forms. Some of us for 8 years. Two of the boys went to primary school together. So, like, we know each other very, very well and we do this out of pure love. So when there are tricky textures, speedy rhythms, it's because we want to challenge ourselves and we love it. And it's so much more satisfying for us to learn something that is demanding and weird, because we've been doing it actually for quite a long time. Fine, not in this configuration, but we have been doing it for a long time, so furthering ourselves is part of it.
Also, with three of the members having pretty good perfect pitch, it means that for the other three, that don't, it means that even when we are sight reading through something or in the learning process, we always get a taste of it sounding pretty good. We like, rather than kind of trying something, us all getting it wrong, thinking, oh goodness, this is way too hard, we're not getting anything back from it. So we kind of get little, almost kind of bits of motivation from glimpses of the harmony from the perfect pitch lot, etc.
Perfect pitch is just cheating, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah. But it's lovely.
There are lots of contexts in which it's not necessarily helpful. In the wider world, for instance, if you're transposing a lot of music that you're singing, but in this world, I think it is more or less very, very helpful.
The masters that I teach up at York, if someone says to me in audition, I have perfect pitch, my response is generally, I'm so sorry, because we're trying to find the cracks in between equal temperament tuning so that the things are, so that thirds are acoustically pure and not just the sort of compromise of the piano. In a slow moving piece, have you got that, especially you people at the top?
Yeah, I think that's exposure therapy, though. Like, we, even if we have an equal temperament in ourselves, like, we really do adapt and learn from one another, and it's and you can hear, especially because we rehearse in very small spaces like our kitchen, that if a chord is beating, it's not good enough, even though we might think it as the perfect pitch lot. And so I think we've learned how to adapt, and I think we're pretty good at it. I don't know.
And I think actually that a really, really key part of this group is most of us are choral singers, so did grow up with the, and kind of have learned, I said most now love. So exactly, are doing exactly that on the side, outside of the group. We are thinking very much about our temperament. No, that isn't equal temperament. And I think we bring that into the group a lot. And when we do the slow practice, there's lots of, oh, should the... I mean, everyone's asking, should the fifth be higher here? Should the third be low? And kind of working out in a very choral way, I'd say.
But isn't that the great thing? I mean, we haven't done a programme yet about tuning. You know, Jacob and I could sit and talk about what the sort of basics are. Where's that thought going? This happens to me a lot these days. But it always has. But isn't one of the great things that even if you're singing howls, I mean, I was singing with Fagellini, we were singing Summer Is Coming last week, that you can't necessarily do the whole thing like that, but if you can do enough of it, then the whole thing is just easier to build on. So the whole, we're back to texture, gap between the bass and the baritone, a smaller gap between the baritone and tenor. If you can get those things right, and then the first third right, everything, all the other parts are going to fall more easily into the place.
If this is the fast music episode, I personally find there is no time to think about, you know, whether we're, you know, just intonated, just intoned, if it's a fast piece. It's in the slower ones, because, again, you have more space to think as a performer as well. You can then think, okay, yeah, I know I'm the major third in this. Let's just see, okay, I'll sing a little bit flatter. Oh, that feels locked in. Okay, good. And then do that per chord. But to have those thought processes... You know, during a fast piece.
And could anyone hear... I mean, this is back to me talking about listening to a jazz pianist. Can your brain even follow it that fast? I'm not sure. Maybe we should just record some, speed it up and see what that sounds like. But it's the slower. It's the slower moments. I also think it's the beginning of a chord. You know, Jacob, in his MA presentation, he came up with this line. He wasn't sure whether it was Miles Davis, but I think actually it's probably Jacob. It's not music until it's out of tune and out of time. And that, as long as you have that front of the chord that's in tune, then bending it, or bending into the chord so that it turns into tune, I mean, that's a very sensual thing. And on we chatted, until finally back to the very tricky arrangement the singers have already referred to, of Esperanza Spalding's I Know You Know, arranged by Alid Walker. Here they are, just breaking it down into a few of its constituent parts. I'm enjoying the wicker chair percussion.
Oh, sorry. I can go on there if you...
It's all jazz.
Great. I mean, should we layer it up? Tom, it'd be great to hear you sing maybe from bar 45, that repeating complex rhythmic ostinato figure. Maybe just a few times.
Sure. Have an A.
Awesome. And then why don't we add in what we're doing above that? So this is the middle four parts, everyone except for Tegan, from the upbeat to bar 43. What? Awesome.
Could you do that without Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just put these in the right
order. It's quite hard.
I know you know, but... Awesome. And now, should we try the whole thing? From bar 41, from Tagging Entry.
The way you look at me when you think I'm not looking. You have to sleep and try and want it best and want you love it funny. I see you're scared and convinced by what I'm trying to say. I know you know that I am yours and I know they take me away.
Wow!
Blimey. You've been listening to Standard Deviation on Choral Chihuahua. Tegan Aldridge, Olivia Hugh-Jones, Nell Norman, Hugh Beckwith, Harry Baker and Tom Lowen. Let's hear a full performance of that track, recorded live at the Pizza Express session. Do go and check them out at standarddeviationjazz.com. There's a rumour of a London concert coming on February the 29th, so follow them on social media to keep up with that. Here's the song in this fabulous arrangement by Alid Walker, and after that, a couple of minutes from Sammy and Me. The way you look at me when you think I'm not looking tells me your heart's asleep and giant one of us and one you love for me. I see you're scared, convinced by what I've tried to say. I know that I am yours and that nothing'll take me away. You already know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. But I'll sing it again. I love you, baby. Nothing'll take me away. The way you always call me with some question, and every time try to pretend you didn't call me just 'cause I was on your mind. Too soon for you to say out loud, but I know, you love me, and though we don't say it, already shows. You already know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. I know that you know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. I already know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. I know that you know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. I'll wait for you to open up. It's not a book. You're just what I've been looking for. Why don't you keep your head in the sand? Whoever you loved before me, who ran nothing like me, nothing like me, nothing like me. You already know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. I know that you know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. You already know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. I know that you know, but I'll sing it again. I love you, baby, nothing'll take me away. The way you look at me when you think I'm not looking. The way you call me up just to see what's cooking. The way you look at me when you think I'm not looking. I look at you the way too, just to know that I do. I know that you know. You already know. I know you know, and I know it shows that I don't know how much you love me, baby. I can see you love me, I know. I already know, but I'll sing it again. I'll sing it again. I love you, and there's nothing will take me away. Yada. Wow, what an arrangement. I just go back to that thing about the amount of information coming at you is almost too hard to process. I'm here with Sammy. I'm here with Nicholas Mulroy. Welcome back to the new series, Sammy.
Happy New Year, Robert. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm lush, as my Bristol sister-in-law would say. No, she would say I'm girt lush. Right. So the first time you've heard the group?
Yeah, I mean, I know, I think a couple of them from elsewhere, but I'm a real sucker for that kind of stuff. I love, as I think you know, I love my instrumental jazz, or I suppose otherwise known as jazz. And I really lovely to hear those incredibly kind of spicy, salty harmonies, isn't it?
It one thing, just because, you know, they force-fed me this really nice dinner first, I think, insisted I had with them. And we possibly had the best bit of the session actually just there over the dinner table. And then you're back to the connection between food and music. But it also occurred to me, you know, they're working at a professional level, but this is officially an amateur thing in, well, actually it's not, is it? Because they do paid gigs and they're working at the very highest level. I think there's no doubt about that. But yet they have other jobs, some of them are full-time musicians, but some of them are doing other things. And I just thought, you know, we're in a sort of brave new world. I know it was always the case to a little bit, but even where we are now in 2024 with all the difficulties about this, people are finding ways to do things at this very highest level. I just found that interesting as well. Also, they are the nicest people in the world.
I thought that really came across, actually. They were a really lovely kind of balance of them being a lovely collective bunch of people, but also some real individual characters in there. I also found, I couldn't help thinking about the way my children talk to their grandparents in the way they were talking to you. I mean, they were very affectionate, but there was also, everything they said was somehow laced with a sense of pity.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I shall never listen to that program again now. Explain what a 1-3-7 is, please. Can I say that's me playing those chords underneath? Thank you very much.
Very good.
I'm just very aware of the individual skills as well. Yeah. I mean, you know, you hear Tom Lowen, who, you know, stated an interest, is an ex-student of mine from the MA. Tom turned up at York with an incredible skill set already, as did a lot of people during lockdown. You would suddenly see 12 of him doing an arrangement of something that he'd done himself to an incredible level. And although it just sounds, you know, it's borderline almost pastiche isn't quite the word I'm looking at, but, you know, when he did that extraordinary bass line just on its own, it did sound almost comic until you put everything else with it. But it required such incredible skill, rhythmic skill and pitching skill.
Incredible precision of everything he does. And even that lovely sort of, I think you called it a tenor solo in the Robbie Burns. It's really, I mean, can't think of anyone who could do, you know, that those kind of slapping bass lines and then this lovely lyrical singing higher up. It's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, there he was singing a bass solo in Monteverdi Vespers. Forget whether you did that one in Durham Cathedral a few years ago. I'm just interested in the sort of multi skills that these musicians have, in that they can do one thing and then they go to others. And I know that listeners like to put people in boxes and say, oh, he's a jazz singer and but the ones who just do all these things, have you ever been tempted by the jazz?
I was a really, really mediocre jazz pianist as a teenager. I used to play in a little bit in bars and stuff. It was quite a good way of making sure you got served when you weren't necessarily old enough. But I love listening to it. I mean, it's certainly more than the repertoire that I would sing. It's my go-to kind of on the headphones. But I was one of the reasons I enjoyed listening to those guys so much. I just don't have the kind of harmonic chops that someone like, is it that guy, is it Harry?
Harry, who's the full-time professional.
Incredible facility and also ability to explain what he's doing with real clarity and kind of simplicity, which I loved.
Very Leonard Bernstein. And Hugh the tenor talking about how you learn that kind of stuff. And it's just stop doing that. Sheer hard work. So that in the end, talking about a muscle memory, it's almost a sort of psychology memory that you just set those things going. Because the point is, when they're fast, you don't actually have a chance to tune them against what you're hearing. You have a chance to tune them in the way that you've rehearsed them.
Yeah,
I think that's, well, it's obviously different from a pianist who puts his hands down and the chord is there. Violinists, I think, would
have. Yeah, you sort of hear things forward and backwards, don't you, at that speed? You're preparing for something in advance, and by the time you get a chance really to evaluate it in real time, it's gone. So the way that the memory has to work is so fast. I was talking to Bill Hunt about this, actually, who
a brilliant viol player,
fretwork, I think, founder member, and he was talking about he'd learned some of the Divine Comedy off by heart as a lockdown project, the Dante rather than the Neil Hannon.
Not National Express. Okay,
no, just no. Checking. He'd learnt about 20 cantos of the Divine Comedy, and he was talking about how memory wasn't just psychological, it was also muscular, and also, you know, you attached emotional things, which is obviously particularly true with things like poetry and singing. But we tend to think of memory as just in our heads, don't we? But it's not at all true. And I thought those guys were brilliant on that, on kind of pinpointing how it is that they remember stuff that seems difficult to remember.
Do go and look them up on at their website, standarddeviationjazz.com, because they got a couple of their live things there from Pete's in the Park. And they did this big show before Christmas with a big band. I can't remember whether any of that's there yet.
The other thing I thought was that actually just how good they are. I mean, it's that stuff, like you, I think you mentioned in the chat, you know, we've done bits of that stuff over the years with Fadge. It's really hard and nowhere near the level of virtuosity that they've achieved. And it sounds brilliant. It's really impressive.
We mostly stayed at the slow level. There was that lovely Roderick Williams arrangement of Losing My Mind.
Just thinking of that, yeah.
Anyway, we've set people go. This is our new end of feature where you and I and Eamon sound very wise, but we're not going to let Eamon do this one. Reminder to go to the website, coolchihuahua.com. Support us on Patreon. We'd love a few more people to support us on Patreon. That'd be very good, where you're just paying a few pounds and you get the wacky entry levels. Anyway, that's enough sales. Farewell. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
See you soon.
Just before you go, another reminder to try listening on Patreon, which costs just a few pounds per month. Or if you prefer, you can very simply make a one-off donation. You can actually do either via coralchihuahua.com. Thanks.